noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And welcome to Monday afternoon here on the Allstate Showcase Studio, Michigan Avenue, as we begin the Wintrust Business Lunch for the week. We're going to go down to Kankakee County a little bit later in the program, talk to Tim Nugent. He's the CEO of the Economic Alliance of Kankakee County. I think like a lot of counties, they are in a situation of having jobs and want of workers, and a big development announced down there earlier this spring. So we'll talk to Tim about that. But we start on Mondays with the folks from Chicago, in the studio, Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
I just want to say today, I get up in the morning and I do my affirmations, and I just want to express my gratitude for the past 247 crappy days that allows me to enjoy this one just so much.
I know what you mean.
The bad weather that we have to go through makes these beautiful days just so much sweeter.
And here it is. We'll never have another bad one until late November. All right. And speaking of good weather, let's go on a bike ride, right? We talk a lot about, in fact, Catherine, we were talking last week with the folks from CNET about the dockless scooters in San Francisco and how they're wreaking havoc there. And dockless bikes now are coming to Chicago?
Yeah. So Chicago's introducing a dockless bike sharing program tomorrow, actually, and they're going to be introduced throughout 10 wards on the city's south side, and it'll be a six-month pilot program. It'll run through November, so we'll see if these are going to be a better option than Divvy.
Why would they be a better option?
Well, they're cheaper, for one. It's only $1 per 30-minute ride as opposed to Divvy, which is $3, and then you also just have more freedom as to where you can ride, essentially, because you don't have to keep finding a docking station. You can leave them basically anywhere.
So you just, when you're done with your bike ride, just affix the kickstand to the cement and walk away?
Basically.
These bikes have generated a lot of controversy in other cities. Chicago has actually kind of been a little bit slower to adopt the dockless bikes than some other cities have. In San Francisco, this is a massive issue right now because a lot of people... Dockless bikes, the system itself kind of assumes the best in people. It assumes that you're going to leave your bike in an orderly place. It assumes that you're going to take good care of it. It assumes you're not going to steal it. So there have been all of those problems in cities like San Francisco, Austin, D.C., other cities that
France,
have adopted
right?
this.
Paris just got rid of their program.
Right. Some cities in Europe are actually like banning them altogether. Like it's just too cluttered and too chaotic. And the worry is that someone's going to finish their bike ride and just leave their bike on the sidewalk.
But there must be a great upside too. I mean, otherwise we wouldn't keep trying it.
Right. The upside is that for cities to use dockless technology, it's a lot cheaper because you don't have to have all these fixed docking stations. So cities can implement dockless bikes for basically $0, right? So Divvy and programs like that are a bit more expensive.
And the city has a plan so that the bikes don't end up in the middle of the sidewalk?
Yeah, so the certain Chicago permits are requiring that the bikes be locked to something, whether that's a public bike rack or, some other outdoor object something could be secured to. So we're assuming that the dockless companies will be providing these locks with the bikes. But
and it also assumes that people will follow through on that and not just let it fall in the sidewalk, right? That they actually will lock it up as they're supposed to.
Well, I would imagine there's a way that it would, if it's not a fixed...
To get dinged with a fine or something.
Right, right. Good thing, bad thing, how long is it going to last? Is it going to be Lime, too?
Lime started
in Rockford, I know.
Yep, they rolled out earlier in Rockford this month. And then Pace is another bike sharing company in Massachusetts that'll be bringing bikes here as well.
So a year from now?
I think that it's going to take some figuring out. It's going to ultimately be something that will, it'll be around, right? It's not going to come and go. I think that it's going to have to get some figuring out. We're going to have to get some city infrastructure around, like making sure these things work really efficiently. But like any new technology, there might be some bumps in the road, but ultimately a positive.
Is Divvy at risk? Will Divvy go away?
I think it's possible. I mean, if they're more expensive and, they're just kind of inconvenient and people like dockless bikes better, then I can totally see them disappearing.
Well, the price is a big factor, right? I mean, it's three times more expensive to use a Divvy than a Lime bike.
Doesn't the city have a deal with Divvy? I mean, the city must be propping up Divvy in
right,
a way.
And you'd imagine that's kind of been partly the reason why Chicago's been a little slower to roll out dockless, right? Because it's got this program that it's already been kind of heavily investing in.
Are you went out to the suburbs, I think, to Oak Park to talk to these folks at Tapster, which is a pretty cool thing. Tell me about Tapster.
Yeah, Tapster is a Chicago robotics startup that has kind of like carved itself a really interesting niche in the robotics world. Touchscreen testing. So basically all it does is tap touchscreens. So think about the touchscreen that's on your phone, on your watch, on your tablet. All the companies that are building these technologies and software for these technologies need to test it. Basically, what it means is they need to tap the button over and over and over again to see how many taps it'll take until the app explodes.
Think of it as a three-year-old. Hey, daddy. Hey, daddy. Hey, daddy.
And it's a task that you really can't ask a human to do because it's so horrible. It makes someone sit in a room for 17 hours and tap a touchscreen. So basically what they've done is created robots that do this instead of humans.
Didn't this guy create the Angry Birds robot?
So he built basically an early version of the Taps robot could play Angry Birds with the robot. So when it was like, and I think it was 2011 when that game was like insanely popular. And so he gained some YouTube fame from that and got some kind of early pub and then realized that like, oh wait, there are technology companies who could really use this technology.
And business is pretty good, right, Catherine?
Yeah, they've definitely found kind of a interesting opportunity in the automotive industry. Mercedes-Benz was one of their first customers. And then also for medical device companies and others as well.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I love the Andrew Mason company Detour. So successful that we'll never see it again.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is now 12:22 on the Business Lunch. We're in the Allstate Showcase studio on this beautiful Monday afternoon right along Michigan Avenue. Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke are in the studio from Chicago Inno. Jim, where do people find out? Where do they sign up for your newsletter?
So you can check us out at Chicago Inno, ChicagoInno.com. And there you can sign up for The Beat, which is our daily email newsletter where we're talking all the stuff that we're talking to you here on the Business Lunch, but every day.
And the Inno Minute every morning on the opening bell here at WGN.
5:25, that's right.
Right, as you sort of floozy around and cheat and go on with Krasanich's show as well. Okay, so talk to me about... Catherine, you wrote this story, Detour. I love this idea. Mm-hmm. Andrew Mason, who was one of the Groupon guys, started this where you would go into a city, and I know some of the people who did it, and they would sort of voice a neighborhood tour. You'd walk around, get to know the neighborhood by someone who knew it.
Yep. So it was launched in San Francisco in 2015 originally, came to Chicago in 2016. And like you said, yeah, it's a tourism app that takes users on narrated walks through the city they're visiting. So, you know, narrators range from people like journalists to activists, but people that are familiar with the city and can give users a authentic view of it.
And now they've sold it to Bose, and mm-hmm. what Bose bought isn't what we know so much, right? I mean, the tours might actually be going away.
Yeah, so Bose says that they want to use it for their augmented reality platform, Bose AR. So that kind of makes sense for them, you know, coming from an audio standpoint. But now the team, the Detour team, looks like they're going to pivot onto Descript, which is Mason's other startup, and that's an audio word processing platform. And they have $5 million in venture capital funding and look like that's going to be the next thing.
I want to talk about that in a second, but so what's Bose get out of this?
So Bose gets the potential to kind of add a really neat feature to its AR platform. So basically what Mason said kind of in a statement was that Bose expects Detour content to reemerge, but they need to find kind of another content partner.
So Bose is buying the technology that Detour used, but they don't really care about who died on this corner in Old Town in 1832.
Right. So the Detour service, as we know it, is going to continue on through the end of May, but unless there's another kind of partner to sort of keep powering it, that itself may not continue. So Detour, the fate of it is sort of still in the air, but what's kind of interesting is the way that the company has sort of pivoted to a service that they built within the Detour experience.
And that is this Descript.
Descript. And basically what they've done is created a really novel audio editing software. Basically think about it as a transcription service. So you do an interview, you do an audio recording of someone speaking, the software transcribes it word for word, and then you can edit that Word document in real time, and it edits the audio as well. So you can take out whole sentences as you're typing and delete, and it also deletes the audio file.
Look, that's what I do in the newsroom. We listen to news conferences all the time, and we pull out segments of audio, and when we do it, I mean, you know, it's very easy now compared to what it used to be, but we would be in a software file, put the cursor at the beginning, and then highlight to the end. You're saying what they would give us is a readout of what those are, and we can just say, cut these words out.
Exactly. So it's huge for, you know, our industries and the news industry. It's also huge for podcasting. Podcasting is blowing up right now, right? And a lot of people need to edit the audio files and podcasts. So
the difference, though, is that, I'm sorry to interrupt you, mm-hmm. but so when you do that, you've got to edit it in a way that makes it sound as if the person is still speaking, right? So it's not choppy. Are there some...
So basically what you need to do is still kind of that fine tuning, right? You still need to go in there and make sure that it still sounds natural.
So it's a rough cut.
Right, it's a rough cut. But when you have to edit a lot of different sort of areas of your audio, I mean, it's a really, really kind of quick and interesting way to do that.
I suppose, too, you could use it. It doesn't have to be fine quality if you're doing minutes of a meeting or things like that. It's one way to just chop it down. You don't really care what the
sound is. For sure. I think there's a lot of potential use cases here, not necessarily just publishing.
And is this out now, available to people? Or?
So they're in the early stages of this. So they've got some early venture funding, and I'm not sure if they have any paid clients at this point, but basically what they're doing is kind of fine-tuning the software and about to roll it out.
Okay, another thing, just before we go, we got a minute left. I talked a little bit about this last week, but Reddit is opening up a sales office in Chicago, right, and that means more jobs here. Why is it that they're opening up here, Catherine?
Yeah, so this office will be mainly a sales office. That's what it's looking like. You know, they have headquarters in San Francisco and then offices in Los Angeles and New York City. So the Chicago office will be the first one, not on a coast. And based on what we've seen some from other companies that have come to Chicago from the coast, usually the sales office is the first step in a bigger office down the line.
Well, that's what happened with Facebook, right?
So happened with Facebook. That's what happened with Google. I mean, you know, you start with sales and then they realize they're like, oh, there's a lot of talent here in the Midwest. We can start to kind of expand the positions here.
Andrea Haynes was on from Blue Sky, and we were talking about it last week, and I'm sort of ambivalent when it comes to Reddit. I thought they were one of the bad actors.
Well, they've kind of worked to clean a lot of the stuff up, too. So, I mean, I think Reddit is kind of one of those experiences that it is what you make it. I mean, I think that there are a lot of Reddit communities that are really impactful and a lot of really valuable. And then, like the rest of the internet, there's a lot of kind of trolly stuff on there, too.
That's just like this show every day. Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It is 12:38 as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio. On this Monday afternoon, in the studio, by the way, is Tim Nugent. He is the president CEO of the Economic Alliance of Kankakee County. I've known Tim well, for my whole life, I think. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate being here.
And we've been talking on the radio. We've known each other forever, but for one reason or another, for probably almost 30 years, I think.
Right.
And so now here you come with the hat of the Economic Alliance, the CEO of Kankakee County. When I read economic stories about unemployment rates and things around the area, Kankakee County is always sort of falling behind, or not falling behind, but lagging a little bit behind.
Right. We've historically had a higher unemployment rate than the state of Illinois or even on national levels. Obviously, that rate has come down just as it has across the state and across the country. But we always are a little, you know, higher.
But it's part of your job is to change that.
That's correct. My job is to try to attract business, create jobs, and match the people that are unemployed up with the jobs that are available. And that's the thing that's happening now. We have a lot of jobs that are available. We just got to match the skills up with the unemployed to the jobs that are out there.
I want to get to that. But one of the biggest reason you're here was this big announcement by CSL Behring, which is in Bradley, a pharmaceutical company. On Armor Road, because it used to be Armors decades ago, and they are announcing this, what they're calling for Kankakee County, a transformative expansion.
That's correct. They, like you said, it used to be Armor Pharmaceutical. It's now CSL Behring, and they are the largest manufacturer employer in the county of Kankakee as it stands. And recently, they purchased 75 acres adjacent to their facility, and they have recently announced that they are going to be expanding by 1.8 million square feet over the course of the next 10 years.
10 years to do this.
That's correct. They've got plans to build five additional buildings, basically doubling their facility. They won't even say how many employees they anticipate will take place. You know, they'll get hired over the course of the next several years. So a lot of construction jobs, a lot of jobs at the end, good-paying pharmaceutical, bioscience-related jobs. So this is a real win for Kankakee County, and hopefully it'll be something that we can use to help change that unemployment record that we've had in the
past.
Well,
that's the interesting thing, right? So you've got, this is a big plus, you know this is coming, and now you build on it, right? How do you do that?
Well, now we try to align the workforce with the jobs that are there. I mean, obviously CSL they've spent a lot of money, hundreds of millions of dollars over the last several years, and they've formed alliances with our local community college, with Olivet Nazarene University, with engineering programs throughout the Midwest. I know they recruit from the Chicago area, from Champaign, Purdue, Bradley University, all around the Midwest. And that's one of the reasons that we're, a great location for this, is because we are centrally located in the middle of a lot of universities, a lot of engineering students, and a lot of medical schools that they're going to have jobs for.
You know, I grew up in Kankakee County. I've lived here in Chicago area for a while. And I think sometimes in the city here, we tend to not recognize just what we've got and how great it is. And I was reading an article or an interview that you did, same sort of thing, right? You talk to people about Kankakee County, the people who live there have a lower view of it than the people who come in and witness it.
That's correct. The people who have come in and gotten transferred into our area, that are working at the CSLs and Nucors and the other facilities throughout the county, they think it's great. Sure, it's a rural area, but we have the amenities, that are necessary. And we're also 45 minutes from downtown Chicago. I mean, that's how long it took me to get here today.
Right.
We can use the amenities that the city of Chicago offers, but have a slower, more rural lifestyle. And that's one of the things that we're offering. We're just not that far away. A lot of people in the city, I know, think the world ends at Route 80, but there's a whole other world down there, and it's growing.
I like the slogan, we're just not that far away.
You're absolutely right. I mean, we're a suburb. We're just a few more miles away, but it doesn't take very long to get there.
Because they're fast miles. I mean, it's not like you're driving to Woodstock. You're driving on I-57, you're driving fast.
It's funny, whenever we meet with developers, they always get there early because they look at the distance and think it's going to take them a long time, but they're always there 20 minutes early.
All right, so tell me about employers on the hunt for employees. Because, I suppose if you had one equation or the other, that's the one you'd want. But you've got to find these workers to keep the employers happy.
That's correct. When I go around to all the major employers throughout the county, that's the thing that I'm hearing, is that, it's all about the workforce. It used to be about incentives. It used to be about, what the state can do for me here or there. Now it's all about the workforce and the trained workforce. They need to be able to have people that have the ability to come in and take these jobs when they graduate from college, and now even in the trade schools, there's a push that the people can graduate from high school and take these jobs, and we've started a lot of apprenticeship programs, internship programs, where students can come work at these facilities, get their degree while they're working, and then end up in 4 or 5 or 6 years, have their degree, and not have a large student debt.
We talk a lot about manufacturing and the fact that manufacturing jobs are going away, but actually the percentage of jobs in Kankakee County when it comes to manufacturing is higher than the national average?
That's correct. We're at about 15% manufacturing jobs, which is higher than the national average. The old myth that we don't make anything anymore is a myth. There's a lot of different things that are being made. It's just not the products of the 70s or the 80s. It's the, it's the new products of today.
Tim Nugent, the CEO of the Economic Alliance of Kankakee County. You wear a much bigger hat, too. You're the mayor of Manteno, Illinois, my hometown.
That's right. I've been the mayor for 13 years.
Thanks for the T-shirts. But tell me the story of Plaquemines, because you brought me some mustard. I know Plaquemines. I didn't know they were made in Manteno now.
Plaquemines used to be a Southside Chicago mustard company. They moved down to Manteno about 20 years ago. They've expanded their facility. They're now making mustard. They're into salad dressing. They just recently bought some more land for another expansion. So they're they're doing great. A Chicago company that started here and needed more room, and so they moved south to Kankakee County.
Manteno is booming, right? I mean, if you drive down I-57 and just drive by, look on either side, it's just taking off.
We've got a lot of things going. We're trying to attract a lot of younger families, and it's working. Like I told you earlier, our school district is, we're getting more younger families. We're starting to have more classes for our kindergartens, and that's what we want. We want to attract young families to, that's the lifeblood of Manteno.
And my parents live there, and they can drive their golf cart around town.
The golf carts are a big thing in town. We've got 300 or 400 golf carts that roam in the town every weekend, and days like today, they're all over the place.
Thanks for coming up. Thanks for the mustard.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. The brewery scene continues to expand across the country and here in Chicago. West Coast-based Ballast Point Brewing is opening a 12,000-square-foot brewery and tasting room in the West Loop. And with much of the scene moving this way with physical locations, we'll see how the recipe for success adapts over time. But one thing is for sure, they'll need a safe and healthy workplace. And thankfully, 1871 can help with that. Tonight, starting at 5:30, the Incubator is hosting a cast of speakers on what it takes to implement safe and healthy workplace strategies. It's a vital time to talk about this for businesses embarking on their journey, since the spotlight can shine bright on the missteps businesses can experience internally and externally. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are. It is 12:53 on the Wintrust Business Lunch, Monday afternoon, a beautiful day, as we said. And Steve Cochran's going to take it outside. I love that. I thought he was kidding earlier. Randy Schaefer's in the studio. She's a digital news editor at the Chicago Tribune and joins us on most Mondays to talk about what's going on in social media. Randy, welcome back.
Hello, Steve.
Thanks for coming back, I should say.
Of course.
So everyone always asks me, when is the move? I should ask you, when is you guys are moving before us?
I don't know. I'm trying to pretend it's not happening. We're just talking about how lovely this view is, and so I'm trying to pretend that we're not leaving it.
It's so funny. People ask me, and I really don't. I figure they'll tell me when it's time.
Right. When you get in and your cubicle's all boxed up, then you'll figure it out.
And that's the positive one, because usually when that happens, you're fired. And now at least there's a possibility you're not fired. You're just moving.
There's still a possibility you're fired, but we're going to go with moving.
Okay. So I will admit that I'm a little concerned about my own attachment to my cell phone. I think I read less now because I have the phone sitting next to me.
Right.
Like I'll read 3 or 4 pages and then check something, I don't like it. I don't think I'm ready for social media rehab, but that's a thing.
It is a thing, yeah. I sent you this story from News on 6, a CBS story, about how social media rehab for teenagers is becoming more and more prevalent.
What does that mean?
So this story gave this really dramatic example of a 17-year-old who was literally not kidnapped, but his parents had arranged for somebody to pick him up at 4 a.m. and take him to a 30-day rehab program where they detoxed him from his social media.
I mean, it read like the kid was a drug addict, when they would surprise them.
Right.
And then carry them away.
He actually was into drugs, but this wasn't what the treatment was for. It was more for social media that led to drugs and depression and a whole host of negative things.
If you look right at the studies, the kids who spend the most time on social media tend to have, or they're more likely to have depression issues. How does that work?
I'm not sure what this study said, but it did say that 50% of teens admit to being addicted to their phones.
Right.
And
so do these programs, is this a business story? Should we be opening one of these rehab centers?
Well, I'm not really sure. I don't think I could run it. But this rehab center did say that it had an 80% success rate. And during the rehab process, I guess they said, they take away the phones from the kids. They send them outside. They get them connected with real life.
I suppose what you're teaching, though, it's not like an addiction. We're using the word addiction, but it's not like an addiction, whether it's to drugs or alcohol, because you are not going to live a social media free life. I mean,
right.
Just because of the way our world is structured now,
exactly.
That's not going to happen. So you can be cured for $50,000?
$50,000. Insurance might cover part of it, but it seems like an expensive price to get away from your
phone. That's what they tell you when they want you to sign up.
Yes.
Okay, so we've got that. Oh, also, there was a story you showed me about designating an heir to your social media accounts.
Yeah. So when you die, you hand off the family china and the family pearls and the passwords to your Instagram, Twitter, Facegram.
When I die, I don't really care what happens to my social media. I mean, should I?
I mean, if someone logs in and they start selling like pyramid scheme marketing things from your Facebook,
name.
Right, you're not going to. I mean, I'd be kind of offended if my friends did that to me.
So truly, if you have a big social media presence, this is something that you should think about.
Absolutely. And this piece that I sent you from Forbes actually details ways that you can preemptively plan what to do with your social media when you die. Some platforms like Facebook will let you set up a legacy contact. So say you die and your sister can take over management of your account. account. And then some of them don't. And for this, Forbes recommends actually like writing out your password and giving it to someone like, hey, if I die, you know, shut down my account or keep updating it for me or, you know, whatever you want to do. You're dead.
But okay, so but really, aside from protecting anything, but with Facebook, with the legacy contact, that probably is a good idea for people to do. Because frankly, I think as I recall, I found out my college advisor, who I kept in contact with over the years, I found out that she died through her Facebook account.
And it's set up, it just says remembering on top of her name. And it's a very tactful way to do it, I think.
And when someone passes away, you can go to that account and then notify their friends or their followers.
Yeah, yeah.
Instagram, let's talk Instagram. Instagram is being ruined by stories. What's that about?
So I thought that this one was really interesting. This was a BuzzFeed piece that talks about how stories are ruining Instagram because more people are posting to stories, but they're not posting to their feeds. And so now all the stuff that shows up in your feed is just like these obligatory sponsored posts.
And so it's not worth it. People are spending their time on stories.
Yeah,
I've never put up on Instagram. I'm trying to post on Instagram more often.
Just not stories.
I haven't done a story at all. And then you tell me that if I watch someone else's story, they can tell?
They can tell.
That's not good.
Is that awkward? Have you been watching too many stories you shouldn't
no,
be watching,
I haven't
Steve?
Been. No, not at all. But I'm not going to watch any stories now because they might think I'm... So then if you watch the stories more than once, does it tell you you've watched them more than once?
No, it just says... your name just kind of shows up. Somebody can open their story and they can swipe up and it has a list of names of the people who have viewed their story and
Very
your name
nice.
Will be there.
Randy Schaefer writes about social media. He's a digital editor, I should say, at the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by.
Of course. Thanks for having me.